Sébastien Henry, nice to be with you.
Nice to be with you.
Sébastien, I have a few questions. Mm-hmm. First of all, I would like to ask you a question about your question, your liberating question. Mm. What we mean by this in the course is that any leader, any person, has a question that triggers his quest or search in life. Mm. And I would like to ask you, what has been your question, the question that has driven your quest of those years in China, in Japan, and with monks? What has been the driving question?
Mm. Well, to me, the driving question really has been all these years, how can I, on a daily basis, embody the quality of presence, of joy, of serenity that I've seen in people that most inspired me? Like monks, a few years, I loved their presence, and my quest has been, how can I embody as a leader myself, as someone who helps leaders as well, to embody this quality of presence. Mm-hmm. It's also, I mean, I know the word is sometimes used in a way that is not accepted by people, but to me it's essentially spiritual. It's how can I achieve my most spiritual essence in the middle of action. I believe in action a lot.
Yep.
Acting to me is very important. I like to build, like many leaders, build, achieve. And how can we keep this level of presence?
Okay, but then why is presence so important to you in your life?
Because presence first is what inspires me, really. And I know as a leader as well, this is what inspires people, really. And motivates them to give their best as well. And we need presence that inspires us, really. And unfortunately, my realization is that it's too rare in many companies. We are so busy with business as usual, with the daily business, so obsessed with only one dimension of business, which is growing as quickly as possible. That we tend to forget how important is presence. And I'm not actually judging others before, I'm judging myself as well. I've been leading a company in Asia for many years, and I fell myself into the trap of getting up in the morning and getting excited mostly at growing my business as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. And I realized after some years that there was something very wrong about it, and that my soul itself was getting dry and was lacking nourishment.
So then that leads to the second question about the what we call the liberating drivers. What are the drivers that could lead us, and how did it happen with you, towards this path of being present? What are the factors, whether structural or societal, that can help us to be more present, as you say, in our case? Or put it in another way, what are the obstacles to this today? What is it in your view?
Well, we could talk about the obstacles, of course.
Yes.
And that would be interesting. But before that, I would like to emphasize more what can help us to develop our quality of presence. And
yes.
To me, there is a group dimension,
yeah,
and there is an individual dimension. The group dimension is, it's much easier to do that when you're supported by people.
Yeah.
Ideally inside the company. If not inside, then with people who work in other companies, and you challenge each other, you share on how to achieve this. It's better in a group, that's why I tend to work more and more with teams, executive teams, because we can collectively work on the quality of presence we have as a team towards people who work for us, towards the rest of the company. This is the group dimension. Then there is, to me, the individual dimension, which is basically a discipline to step back,
yeah,
at regular times and really step back from the action.
Yeah.
It may be a short time, but this will be time very precious to have a bigger picture, have more awareness of what's going on, and avoiding getting into action that may go into directions that are not useful for anyone.
Yeah.
So that's that's discipline. I like the word discipline. Nobody likes this word, or very few people,
mm-hmm.
but I like it.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, we have sometimes discipline for some kind of things, but not for...
Yeah.
For
well, actually, leaders have a lot of discipline in my experience.
Yes.
It's just that sometimes they use the discipline for the wrong
motives.
Purpose.
Yeah. And when you look at society and its evolution for the last decades, what are the factors that could help us collectively to go in that direction? Do you see some factors, elements that can help us, drive us on this path of being more present, both individually and collectively in companies?
Well, I can see many things. We have to look, I think, at the one the ways that have the most leverage. And what I can see is that the way we educate leaders for the future is absolutely dysfunctional, in my opinion, at the moment. I'm very interested in someone called Marcus Aurelius, who was a Roman emperor in the second century. The education of a leader at that time was a lot about seeing the big picture, learning ethics, learning the art of acting rightly. And very little actually on waging war, on conducting warfare. They were generals for that. But now I always tell myself, if Marcus Aurelius would be back today and would look at the way we educate leaders, he would be appalled. He would be like, what are you doing? You're training all these guys to manipulate weapons. That's, we call it strategy now, or techniques, or any like financing, where to finance a company.
Yep.
But there is nothing, absolutely nothing, in the way we educate leaders about themselves, about how to help them align their action with their true values, how to help them, their soul grow at the same pace as they grow their business. There is nothing on this, and it's a tragedy to me, really. I mean, the way the world is, the state of the world now is linked also to where we educate leaders, and we talk about what we can do, what are leverage points. I think changing radically, not just adjusting, but changing radically the way we educate leaders is, I think, one of the most crucial tasks we have to
mm-hmm.
to engage in.
And do you see signs that this is happening, that some people are like you are going in that direction?
I have good hope, actually. There's a lot of work to do, a massive amount of work to get there, but I have some hope because I see more and more managers, already senior leaders, between 35 and 45 years old, who are determined not to do any more business as usual.
Yeah.
They've done it, they've succeeded in some way, have been very successful, but they have a determination not to go for the kind of business this kind of business anymore. That means business without conscience, without a keen awareness of the impact we're having on the environment, on society. They don't want that anymore. They want more. They want more of life. They realize that helping their soul to grow, helping their heart to open, at the same time as they're doing business, is becoming even more important than anything else to them. So I hope in this generation, that you have even the younger guys, the guys in their 20s now, I see a lot of people with talents, they have their eyes sparkling when they think of changing the world. When you see in business schools, there are more and more people engaging into a different way of doing business.
Yeah.
So yes, I've got some hope, but I also have a deep awareness that it's not going to be easy. Because the power of business as usual is tremendous, it's very strong. So
yeah.
That's why I see my action as only one of the many small dots that are needed, or small actors that are needed to create a collective direction. And,
absolutely.
Yes.
Good. What we will also address during the course are dilemmas, ethical dilemmas.
Yeah.
And they are not just problems, they are also opportunities to know ourselves better and and to liberate ourselves from the ego or from our emotions. And I think you have, you, let's say, your type of approach to meditation, visualization, is also helping to engage in those ethical dilemmas and find solutions to them. Can you explain a little bit about it? How you try to stimulate a dialogue between the mind and your deep intuition? How do you do this? How does it work?
Indeed, I think most leaders totally neglect the huge, immense resource they have inside, which is what I call in my book, my latest book, Deep Intuition, which is basically a voice of wisdom we all have, but that leaders need even more than anyone else because of these ethical dilemmas you were mentioning. Now, one thing I want to say, because it's very important for me, is that I developed this awareness to deep intuition not for business purposes initially. It was more on my spiritual path. But I also realized that this practice of tuning in to my deep intuition could also help tremendously in the business field. To be very concrete, we're facing an ethical dilemma. We may be thinking about it for days and days, and one day it's yes, one day it's no, and it's really 50-50 decision. Then tuning into our deep intuition can give us a clear and resonant answer. What I mean by resonant is it feels right. It feels like the decision we're making is right, and there is no dilemma anymore. The dilemma is gone, totally gone. And this is a resource that is, again, we're talking about the education of leaders that is never taught in business school. It's a big pity, because everyone gains. We leaders gain. People who work for them have a lot to win as well, because decisions are more right, faster, and they are more whole. It means deep intuition usually doesn't look just at the needs of the ego. It has a very, it's a voice of wisdom that takes into account the whole situation, which the ego doesn't. The ego is focusing on gaining as much as possible in the shortest possible time, which is a very limited scope.
How do you distinguish then deep intuition and emotions?
Deep intuition to me surfaces only when the mind is very calm and the emotions are quiet. So usually the way I like to guide myself and to guide others in this space of deep intuition can start, it's not the only way, but it's a good way and reliable way, through a meditation session. In meditation we learn to tune into our breathing, to calm the mind, so our mind becomes much more quiet. That's when the intuition, the voice of deep intuition, has the best chance to surface. That's when you can hear it. So again, we're back to discipline here. It doesn't take, the truth is that it doesn't take much time. It doesn't even take much skill. It has to be learned, but it's like anything else. We spend many years learning accounting and many useful principles, but we don't even spend 3 hours in our life learning how to tune into intuition. It's a bit silly, isn't it? So it doesn't take much time. It can have a huge impact on the way we make the right decisions.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have written a book about how monks and their principles, whether they are from the Western world or the Eastern world, can help leaders to do their job. Now, what is your vision of leadership? I mean, there is a traditional vision of the heroic kind of macho leadership.
Yes.
Definitely, this is not
how
we would, the warrior, how we would portray monks. So, what is your, can you try to explain what is your vision of a good leader, of a leader, let's say,
mm-hmm.
of a wise leader?
Before answering this, I just want to specify something about the relationship with monks and leaders.
Yes, good.
To me, it's not about so much about what monks can teach to leaders. It's about what leaders can get from monks in terms of inspiration, which
Absolutely.
Is a bit different.
Yeah, which is different.
Because monks, actually, to me, I love the way monks lead their life. I'm very inspired by it. But I don't think monks would could run, many monks could run a business successfully.
Yes.
So, and they don't want actually to teach anything to leaders. They don't feel legitimate. But the other side, to me, can be very rich. How, as a leader, when I go to a monastery, I talk to the monks, I observe how they lead their life, what kind of inspiration I can take out of it.
Yeah.
And actually, now I linked back to the question of what is a good leader to me. It's if I look at leaders that inspired me the most in the past, that brought the best out of me, and those who brought the worst out of me, it really boils down to the ability to inspire with authenticity. Really, people who I see them, again, we're back to the quality of presence. Even before they talk about where to go, what kind of plan they have in mind, what company they want to build, it's the presence. And I get close to them, I feel like, wow, I want to work for that guy.
Yeah.
Even sometimes before he speaks or she speaks, it's like, there is something, in French we say a souffle, in English
spirit.
We say a spirit, yeah.
Yes.
Actually, it's not a coincidence to me. In the past, in the Middle Ages, we were representing saints with, you know, this
yes.
This circle of light.
Yeah.
And to me, that's presence. That's people. We say also radiate, or they shine. And this is the kind of leader I want to work with. Then, of course, after, I need also to learn about vision, about where they want to go, where they want to build. But I would say. It comes second to me, yeah.
Yeah. Now, in your book, you've identified 9 principles that leaders can get as an inspiration from the way monks
mm-hmm.
live. Can you briefly go through those 9 principles and just give us a little bit of
Ooh.
What they... Yeah, it's
all
a
nine.
Job, maybe not all 9 then,
okay.
But the most important in your eyes.
Well, I go through a few of them, and
yes.
maybe it's a bit too much, but one is the ability that monks have, which is quite unique, to step back regularly during the day, although they have to work, all the monks work,
mm-hmm.
but they still make it an essential principle to step back regularly from their work, to
yeah.
Get back to themselves, get back to the essential. That's through praying, that's through meditating, for most of them, whatever the technique or the approach is, they take this time as the most precious part of the day, and they do it 5, 6, 7 times a day. Now, when you talk to a leader about meditating one time a day in the morning, everybody's like, wow, I can't do that, I have no time. Of course, leaders have much more pressing issues than, there are many difficult issues to solve. But to me, really, it's a lie to oneself to say that I don't have 15 minutes a day to meditate.
Yeah.
It's just a lie. And I've seen that, I've lied to me for many years.
Yeah.
I was sincerely convinced I had no time. So this is one first principle. Taking time regularly during the day to step back, slow down, breathe, get back to oneself. And then we have also a clearer vision of what is truly essential and what is just important.
Yeah.
That's one principle. The other one is the principle of poverty. All monks have made a decision that there was something much more important than possessing goods, even more accumulating goods, which is pursuing their spiritual path. And they've realized for themselves that the more they would attach themselves to possessing goods, the less available they would be for their spiritual growth. Now, as leaders, of course, a business is not meant to achieve spiritual growth of the employees. But I've noticed that there is a way that a company can lose its soul. Like, if you look at the monks, when they, if an individual decides to focus all his strengths on acquiring more goods, we lose availability to grow spiritually. A company, to me, is pretty much the same. A company is a soul too. When you get into a company, you feel it. you push the door and you feel, wow, this is the spirit of this company, even before talking to people. And the same is true for companies as for individuals. When a company focuses, is obsessed with only the rate of growth or the profitability at the expense of anything else, to me, the soul of the company is suffering. Sometimes it even wither. It can even, you know, dry up, and there's nothing left of it. So the way as a leader, I was inspired by the principle of poverty, followed by monks, is, do I really need as a leader to always build forecasts with the growth that would be as fast as possible? And I realized for myself as a leader that I didn't too. It was my ego requiring to, my ego was very proud to grow 50-70% a year. I was proud to say this in society and share this with people. Wow, great. But what was the need really, apart from the need of the ego? No. And of course, we didn't decide to, after some time, to throw away the objective of growth, but just be more fair to ourselves as well. And to say, hey, this is important, but we're going to put other principles or other objectives at the same level of importance than just growth or profitability. And we're not the only one. There are now many business leaders who decided to do so. And just to finish, the magic of this, in some cases, they've realized that their business grew even faster than they would have imagined.
Yeah, indeed. Now, in terms of practices, liberating practices, if we may say so, what are those that you practice? I suppose meditation, and besides meditation, what do you do?
Personally, I practice meditation at least one time a day in the morning, but very often I also practice several times during the day, just because I've noticed that meditating one time in the morning is not enough to guarantee that you're staying connected to yourself and to others during the whole day. I was noticing that I was losing it, this connection to myself and to others, without regular checkpoints, if you want, during the day. So now I set my alarm very often, 4 or 5 times a day, to remind me, hey, late morning, afternoon, late afternoon, it's time to meditate, step back, get back to myself. Sometimes I don't manage to answer the call or this meeting. I call them meetings with myself,
yeah.
But that's okay. We don't shoot for perfection.
Yeah.
We shoot for improving day after day. And so that's one practice. The other one is making sure I tune into my deep intuition regularly, not only when I have huge decisions to make, which is the more crucial, but let's say every 2 weeks, every 3 weeks, every month, or every week sometimes. Making sure I take a time, special time, to tune into my intuition and to listen to what my intuition has to say about my life, the way I lead my life. The good thing with intuition is that it has always something to say, interesting and rich. So why lose this wisdom? It's as if you had a friend who was so smart, so wise, was living next door, and you never get to see him or her. It's a pity. So that's another practice. I would say these are at the moment the two main practices. Of course, when I'm also a professional of helping leaders to grow their business at the same time as they grow spiritually. So very often when I work with them, I also get challenged myself I get new ideas, or I get a new way of looking at things. That's another. That's a good benefit.
Okay. Now, I think in your book you talk about conversations, right? In the course, we also address what we call liberating conversations. So, conversation through which we create meaning with other people. And that can liberate us from, for example, the fear of darkness, of the unknown. What would you have to say about this, or what do the monks have to say about this?
The monks have a lot of respect for silence.
Yeah.
When you go to the monastery, there are areas where you're not allowed to talk, or after a certain time, or before a certain time, whatever. Why do they value silence so much? It's because they know that we need silence to let some truth emerge, a truth about the conversation we have with others, or truth within ourselves. With too much talking, the truth gets constrained and cannot surface. So now I know most managers I work with say, I know, they say, yeah, of course, we need to listen, we've learned that from Leadership 101, you know. But the truth is, I've noticed in many occasions, although they may know it, they don't practice silence. I've worked with many leaders who had great qualities, but they were missing one big quality, is the quality of being able to shut up when they interact with people. And they're missing a lot in the conversations. There are a lot of creative ideas that get crushed, that don't get expressed. There are lots of good judgments, views of the future. It's a waste. Now, there's also silence in conversations with myself. I was talking earlier about the art of tuning in to your deep intuition. To me, this doesn't happen when our mind is so busy with internal dialogue, always talking about or thinking of something for the future, or regretting something of the past. To me, there is a lot of value also for oneself, for others, of learning as a leader to make silence within, through a short meditation process, could be through other ways, but reaching silence and letting the voice of intuition come to the surface. And even maybe it's a bit of a stretch, I know, for some people, but it really works after a bit of practice, is engaging into a conversation between our mind, our rational, analytic mind, and our deep intuition. The amazing thing is we notice that sometimes what the deep intuition has to say is very different from what the analytic, rational mind has to say. It's the first time I experienced that was very shocking to me. I was educated like many leaders are educated, thinking or believing that our rational, analytic mind could face any situation and would get it right most of the time, assuming the analysis was thorough enough. And sometimes, when you have this experience, that deep intuition is saying something very different. What it says here, for most people it's here, is very different from what is here. And furthermore, that what it says here sounds even more right, is resonating inside. It feels right, it sounds right, much more than what it says here. That's challenging for a leader. And I think that's fascinating because when we start making decisions much more based on our deep intuition, magic happens.
One last question. Let's talk about, for the last part of the course, about liberating spirit. And that is basically your vision of the world and how it can help us to be liberated from our ego, from all kinds of things. You mentioned in one of your speech about Marcus Aurelius,
mm-hmm.
and also about Lao Tzu, tuning in with mm-hmm. the Tao or with the laws of the universe in the case of Marcus Aurelius. Can you elaborate on this, and what is your, let's say, vision of the world or the laws of the universe to which you tune in order to be yourself and to be a good leader?
Okay, I want to make sure I really understand the question.
Yes.
We can cut that.
Yeah, yeah,
can you rephrase it?
Yeah, basically, maybe we need to address it in terms of obedience to something higher. And basically, if you could talk about Marcus Aurelius, Lao Tzu, as you did yesterday, but also about what you feel personally and what you try to obey to.
Okay. One principle that really inspired me as well in the life of monks is the principle of obedience. When you become a monk, you commit to obey to the head of the community, abbot or whatever the name is.
Mm-hmm.
At first, that was totally uninspiring to me. I don't want to obey to orders that I may not understand or may not accept, but I learn through listening carefully to the life of monks or to their voice that it's much more, obeying is much more than a passive behavior. It's listening carefully to the truth that may be inside this order. And I was also inspired by thinkers like Marcus Aurelius or Lao Tzu, Chinese philosopher, that insist, they both insist on the necessity, especially for leaders, for anyone, but especially for leaders, to listen to, or to tune in, or to get into harmony with the order of the universe. There is some harmony in the universe that we need to replicate internally, and we need to tune into that harmony of the universe. So that may sound very abstract, and it is in some way, but I also believe that when we are in harmony inside, that is matching the harmony of the universe, we feel it. And when we're not, we also can feel it, although it may be not very, we may not be very aware. When we're in harmony like this, we feel whole. We feel something is strong inside, something is peaceful inside. And the problem again is leaders are never taught or never even invited to do this work of tuning in to the harmony of life. It's something that may sound too abstract to them. Anyway, it's not very relevant when you look only at action, growth, and daily business. So again, there is to me a discipline to regularly ask oneself, "Hey, am I really as an individual, a leader, taking the place I deserve or the responsibility I have in this world? Am I in harmony with this world?" And if you look at Marcus Aurelius, this Roman emperor I was telling you about a bit earlier, this is something he spent half of his life on battlefields, fighting enemies trying to invade the Roman Empire. But still, in the evening, he would spend regular time to ask himself this question: am I in line with my destiny? Am I really following this the order of nature? And if I'm not, what can I do to realign myself? What leader is asking this question today? Again, that might be a different vocabulary at the moment, but still the essential question is the same. Is the life I'm leading as an individual and leader really in line with what I'm supposed to do here on Earth?
Perfect.
Yeah?
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Thank you. Great.